That the worship team sang today, it was just perfect. And I didn't arrange this at all with Pastor Shannon, but the part that the bridge that says "Never Gonna Let You Down" is exactly what my message is about today. And I had no idea that that was going to be the message. But what I want to start out with today is a short video. It's about 14 minutes long, and I was reflecting, For all of us, whether in the Coast Guard or not in the Coast Guard, for the last 35 plus days, we've been going through a storm. Everybody's lived through a storm. And it's a storm that we didn't ask for, so we didn't navigate into that storm. There's nothing we could do to get away from the storm. And everybody, and obviously the folks that work for the government, Coast Guard in particular, have really felt this. But I can tell you, as a community member, we've felt it right with you. We have been right there. In fact, I just got an email this morning, is that the seafood industry in Alaska just raised $77,000 to go to Coast Guard mutual assistance. And that's just one of many. And that $77,000 is half of what was needed for the whole state of Alaska. And that was just 85 people donated that. But what I want to talk about this morning is a storm. And the storms that we go through in life. So I'm going to show this short video. And this video is a true story. It's actually a documentary of a Coast Guard rescue and of a miracle that happened in the middle of the storm. So this rescue happened about 30 years ago. So if it was in the Coast Guard, might look at some of the aircraft and think, wow, that came from Fred Flintstone days or something like that. It doesn't look like anything you can see today, but that's what it was. That's what we had to work with back in those days. And the rescue happened in Sitka, although you'll recognize Kodiak in the picture. And the simple reason being is that we weren't allowed to go to Sitka and shoot the film. So we had to do what we had. And I had this video made for one reason only, and it was that it was never intended to go public. I mean, it was to create an oral history for the five people that were, six, because there was one person who got rescued. But for the five crew, it was just a way to create an oral history for the crew. And because you know how it is today, and somebody put it on Facebook, and that was the end of the close-knit group. It's been on Facebook and all over the place. But the rescue itself was, shot here, and it's about a miracle that occurred during a Coast Guard rescue. So we'll play that, and then we'll talk a little bit more about it. Oops. I should say, I forgot to give you one warning. There's one salty word that's used in here, and we couldn't get it out, and the guy is now a born-again Christian. I know he's repented. So there you go.
My name is Clint Blades. My dad is Jim Blades. I grew up in Southeast Alaska. We were living in Sitka at the time. We lived on a float house, and it was wintertime. It was in December. We went out fishing one day.
There seemed to be something different about that day. I can't really explain what it was, just kind of a feeling.
We came in at 4 o'clock and took the shift over, basically look over our aircraft, and then go have some dinner and just kind of relax and hopefully have a quiet night.
We had no idea that there was a storm moving. Typically, the off-going section briefs you as the oncoming section, and nothing on the horizon that we knew of.
That particular night, there was a emergency weather broadcast, and we missed it. We had listened to the weather, and then my dad had shut off the radio, and he was icing down fish, and it was just a little bit after dark. And within just a few minutes, the wind was just ferocious. I mean, the waves were already coming up, and the boat was leaping around, and a wave picked us up and slammed the boat on the rocks. I could hear the crunch of the wood and everything, and I knew that was not good, even being a little kid. And my dad backed the boat off of the rocks, and we got out into open water. At that point, I don't think my dad wanted to call the Coast Guard. He told my mom later that he would not have called if I had not been there. My mom, when she got on the radio, she heard my dad's voice, and immediately she kind of panicked. She called, got a hold of the local church, and asked them to start praying, which they all did.
We just sat down after dinner in the wardroom, and the SAR alarm went off, and there was a boat sinking near Vitskary Rocks, which actually wasn't that far from the air station. It's like 4 or 5 miles away. We got the helicopter turned up, we taxied it out to the runway, and just immediately took off, and it was pitch black.
It just blew me away that that night we actually flew. It was snowing, it was windy, and, you know, I was new to it.
The weather was so bad that, I mean, we couldn't see anything. Carl Saylor was in the door, and he looked down, and he says, "I've got him. I've got the light on the boat."
And as we got over the top of the vessel, we got hit by a huge gust of wind.
The aircraft just lifted up and started driving backwards.
We were uncontrollably falling out of the sky.
Carl's calling up, up, up on the headset. I'm calling up, up, up.
And we pulled full power, pulled full up on the collector, and nothing happened. We kept going backwards and down. Greg and I on the front, both of us on the controls. The engines were up in the red line. The helicopter just wasn't responding. We were going backwards at 50 or 60 knots, completely out of control. It's just like a paper plane in the wind. There's nothing we could do.
And I'll never forget, I looked over at John, and he looked at me, and we thought at that point, this is it. We're going in. We had no control. We're going backwards. The seas were 30, 40-foot seas.
Something happened. Greg and I both looked at each other, and we both knew that this was it. We were going to go in, that we were going to die. Then I just suddenly got the sense that Carl Saylor, my flight mechanic, was leaning over my shoulder. I just felt his presence there so strongly that I just turned around to tell him, "We're about to crash, sit down."
Kind of yelled at me over the ICS, "You need to be strapped in." I told him, I said, "That's not me, nobody's up there." He said, "Well, somebody was up here."
And I turned around, he wasn't there. There was nobody there. But I felt this presence in the cockpit that was so real that I had to turn around and say something to him. And it was that moment we stopped.
Next thing you know, the thing just shuddered to a stop and we were hovering again.
So we regained control of the helicopter.
Once we got in there and we located the vessel, we tried to do a hoist. With the fishing boat, they have a lot of rigging that extends up into the air.
We're looking at the rigging on the boat. It's covered with all kinds of lines to snag in.
It's very easy for it to get caught up in the rigging, and if that had happened, it would have pulled us out of the sky.
And basically realize at that point that there is no way we're going to get a basket to this man.
So Greg got on the radio and just told the skipper, "Hey, skipper, you're going to have to jump overboard because there's simply not enough room on the back deck of this little boat to put the basket."
And so Dad got the survival suits out, got suited up, and then picked me up and strapped me onto his chest. He said, "We're going to be going underwater, so just hold your breath for as long as you can." And so then we rolled off the back. The waves are just huge. Water was cold, and we just started getting tumbled. And like we would pop up and get air and then cough it up. Okay, breathe. Okay, hold your breath. We're going under again. And I just remember getting rolled over and again.
And then all of a sudden, the stern of the Bluebird went down. The nose came straight up, and it just slithered right down into the water.
So now we had two people in the water, and we still couldn't get them out.
So it was that point that I realized that the only way you could do this is if we put the rescue swimmer in. I remember asking Jeff, "Are you willing to do it?"
We got two options here. We can throw him a raft and hope he gets it, or we put you in the water. And Jeff immediately said, "That's what I'm here for, put me in the water."
We sent him out the door and lowered him down. Just as he got over the top of them, we got hit by another big gust, and it started blowing us away.
I began to feel myself being pulled backwards and more or less just skipping on the top of the waves. And I finally just raise my arms up and just drop out of the sling. And I look around and Jim is nowhere to be seen.
Something just told me to take the nose light of the helo and spin it to the left. And somehow Jeff knew to follow that beam of light.
He swung the searchlight around, pointed over in their direction, and I just began then to swim towards the searchlight.
We're in the water and the chopper gets there. And then all of a sudden, this guy is next to us.
To my surprise, I found that he had Clint, his six-year-old son, with him. I swam behind him and I said, "Hey, I'm a rescue swimmer. I'm here to get you out." And he said, "Well, do you think they'll be able to get us out of here?" And I said, "We do this shit all the time." And of course, little did he know, my first time.
We saw him swim up to them. He gave us a thumbs up that he was ready to be picked up, so we moved in again.
Each time I'd grab the basket, and then it would be just snatched out of my hand.
And we've been at it now for probably 40 minutes or so. I just started to think, well, you know, if we crash, nobody's going to come get us, and these guys are going to die. So I asked the crew, I said, "Hey, what do you think if we drop the life raft down to these guys and let them ride it out for the night?"
It was a hard option to consider. Nobody in the aircraft was real keen on the idea.
We all knew at that point, to drop a raft to this guy, he'll never get it.
And thankfully, nobody said anything. So I said, "Okay, let's go in and give it one more try." We moved back in again, and on that very next try, we got the basket down to them.
And they held their position long enough to where I was able to literally get Jim and Clint into the basket. Give Carl the thumbs up. The basket just shot out of the water like a cannon.
Brought him up as quickly as the hoist would go.
We get him hauled in, Carl and I, toss him out of the basket towards the back of the plane so it can go back out and get Jeff.
I just prayed and said, "God, this is my friend, and he's got a family, and we just need to get him home." So we put the basket down, and we tried a couple times.
And we got him, probably the second try, we got him.
Secured myself down into it, grabbed on, and shot out of the water.
As soon as Jeff climbed into the basket, we got knocked backwards again. And we started dragging Jeff backwards through the waves.
Bam. I mean, I hit a wave that just knocked the wind out of me, ripped my mask and snorkel off.
When he hit the wave, the helicopter shuddered so hard that I thought we might have broken the cable.
In the cockpit, he said, "Oh my God, we just killed him."
And then I hit two more of those waves.
But when the basket broke free of the waves, it caused it to swing like a pendulum.
Carl and I are trying to steady the swing. I'm grabbing the wire, and it's dragging me back and forth across the deck of the helicopter, trying to keep him out of the tail rotor.
So both Mark and Carl were able to control that cable and eventually bring Jeff in.
I more or less just dumped myself out of the basket, looked back, and I saw Jim and Clint sitting there, gave them the thumbs up. We were back, and we were alive. I don't think we had quite understood the enormity of the whole thing. We all gathered ourselves around the front of the aircraft and just looked at each other in amazement. It was just an incredible feeling what we had just done. And as I walked away, I could not believe that the first high water rescue that the Coast Guard Rescue Swimmer Program was going to see, we had done it right there in Sitka in incredibly difficult conditions. Everybody had been pushed to their limits, and we had something to show for it. We had, you know, two crew members off the fishing vessel Bluebird we'd saved, Jim and his six-year-old son, and then we were alive. Tremendous airmanship by the pilots, great airmanship by the flight mechanic Carl and the radioman Mark to get them and me back in the aircraft. And as we all kind of went our separate ways, I know how I felt, and I know how I felt when I got home. I wanted to remember this. I wanted to visually capture everything that had happened to me that night. I never wanted to forget it.
Not being the experienced guy on the crew, I had no clue what we'd done. I thought we just did a rescue.
They knew that there was a good chance that they weren't going to survive that, and they came anyway. During different hard times in my life, I've looked back at that and thought, you know, if God got us through that, you know, he can get us through anything. And how do you thank somebody who does that, you know? They risk their life and their future and everything to save you. Like, thanks, doesn't really cut it, you know?
A lot of guys I know and John, a lot of guys he knew, they didn't come back. They didn't make it back. I've always been grateful for that.
It's just a reminder that God is good, and that without his miraculous help in that situation, we would have all died. My mom got her husband back, my brother got his dad back, and it was incredible. They knew that there was a good chance that they
A lot of guys I know, and John, a lot of guys he knew.
Can you hear me, Father John? Have you lost what you believe? What's the matter? What's the meaning when nothing's as it seems? 'Cause in a little while, when all will be over, you're gonna say goodbye. Go and get your closure. In 100 years, when you're just a haze on the water, and then when it clears, it's another's turn to discover. But you know, you'll have to let go. Like you. Cause in a little while, when all will be over, you're gonna say goodbye. Go and get your closure. In 100 years, when you're just a haze on the water, and then when it clears, it's another's turn to discover. But you know, you'll have to let go.
I had to share the last part because if you didn't notice, Lori was in that part. So I would have had a hard time if she hadn't seen her with our two kids. So I think we have 3 kids. I'm not sure who all were there, but thanks for indulging the video. And I wanted to share the video because it's really not about individuals. It's about the fact that Christ showed up in the middle of a rescue. And I should say, just for historical note, it really was the first time a rescue swimmer was used in the Coast Guard. It was the first time ever, and just a quick backdrop to that is that, as a pilot, and the rescue swimmer program was brand new then, yeah, I have to be honest and say that I wasn't really confident that it was a good idea. It's not that I didn't trust the rescue swimmers to do their job. I mean, they were phenomenal athletes. They were just incredible individuals, but the idea of chucking somebody out into 14-foot waves at night just didn't seem like a good idea to me. But as it turned out, it was a great idea, and the program's got on to tremendous success. And every one of the crew is actually now saved. At the time, it wasn't. And I've always believed in God. I can remember being just 4 or 5 years old, and I don't know how I knew, but I knew that God existed. I didn't have a personal relationship with Christ like I do now, but I knew God existed. Carl, the flight mech, who was the one that said, he's the one that I told him to sit down because, and this is the other reason I wanted to share this video with you, because, you know, we've all gone through storms. If we're not going through a storm right now, you're going to go through a storm again in the near future. You know, whether it's relocation, you know, we're being transferred someplace, or whether you have a financial issue, you have somebody in the family who is, who needs a diaper change, or whatever it is. Or has an addiction, or whatever is going on in your life, there's a storm that's going to come. And so really the message I wanted to share with you is how do you get through those storms? And in this particular case, as soon as the as soon as the alarms and everything else went off, we didn't know this at the time, but the wife, Jill, the wife of the fisherman, started praying. She contacted her prayer chain in town, and they all started praying. When I told Carl to sit down, because I thought he was up. You know, he told me later on. I didn't know this. He told me later he was actually on his knees praying. But I want to just emphasize one part, is that if you ever sat at your desk and have somebody come behind you, not even be really quiet, you don't hear him coming, and they sort of lean over you and you feel that sense of somebody's leaning over you and you turn around, well, that's exactly what happened. That's exactly what happened. And I was so real, so it was just such a I could feel that sense of, and I mean, there's only one person it could have been. It would have been the flight mech, because the rescue swimmer was swimming around in the water, and it could only be the flight mech. So I literally turned around to tell him to sit down, and he wasn't there. And we talked after the fact, and everybody in the crew felt that. We didn't say anything at the time. We didn't just say, well, gosh, did you feel that? It wasn't like that. It was probably several weeks after that. And Greg, who was the co-pilot, he said he looked at me, he turned to me and looked, and we actually did that right before the helicopter stopped. He and I looked at each other, because we were literally, and this is at nighttime, it was, the winds were gusting 70 to 80 knots out there, the seas were 30 to 40 feet, and we started for the Coast Guard guys who understand this, we started in a 50-foot hover, and the nose of the helicopter just pitched up completely out of control, and we were going backwards and down, and we're just, there's nothing we could do, pulled full power, full forward on they put all the control inputs in, nothing happened. And so Greg looked at me, I looked at him, and we just knew this is it, we're going in. And there wasn't a moment of panic, it wasn't that at all. And somebody asked, well, were you afraid? I don't think I had time to be afraid. Maybe afterwards I was, but it was just like, I've got to get this job done, I don't have time. But it was right then that after feeling that presence in the cockpit, we just stopped. And I looked at the altimeter, the radar altimeter, and we're at 15 feet. And the nose of the helicopter was pitched up, so it really means we're probably a little lower than that. It means the tail was probably 2 or 3 feet from the water. So the helo was about 78 feet long. So with the nose pitched up, the tail was down. So we were probably a couple seconds from going into the water. And that would have been it. I mean, I wouldn't be here right now. So my message today is really about the storms. How do you deal with the storms? And most of us have come through a storm. We just come through a storm right now. And the real question is, what was our focus in the storm? What were we focusing on? Were we focusing on the fact that, that we're in a situation where we're not going to get paid, or we have no control over what somebody else is doing to us, and what are we going to do about it? Or I'm getting orders someplace, and I don't really want to go there. I have no control over that. Whatever the storm is, I think a lot of times we feel a lack of control. And I can tell you, as we're going backwards at 50 or 60 knots, and I should say when we finally stopped at 15 feet, I looked at the airspeed indicator, and it showed 55 knots in a hover, which is not normal. I mean, you're not supposed to be doing that. So my opening scripture is Jeremiah 29:11. This says, the Lord says, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future." So I think we have to start from the premise that Christ, if we have a relationship with Christ, he is in our life. He's not going to put us in a position where he's not going to realize his plans for us. But it also is up to us to participate in his plans for us. So how do we face the storms? We're often out of control. And we were definitely out of control. I was going backwards. And it happened 3 times. We're going backwards at 50, 60 knots, and it was just like hanging on, just trying to hope things would turn out. But that's kind of how it is in life sometimes. We're going through storms, a lot of times not of our own making. Sometimes it is of our own making. Sometimes we do things that cause issues, and then we're left to deal with the consequences. But then a lot of the times, there's storms that just happen. We just find ourselves in the midst of a storm. Like I said, they can be financial, they can be relationships, they can be health. It can be family, jobs, any number of things. So the question comes, are we alone in the storm? Where were we? And I can tell you, in the middle of that storm, I didn't have time to pray. And I thought back about it afterwards. And when I was first here in Kodiak, there was a, we flew all the times, and we didn't have, just for point of reference, we didn't have GPS and night vision goggles and all those awesome tools they have today, and I wish we had. But we flew a lot at night and flew through mountains at night, and I remember coming back so many times with my knees shaking. I'll be honest, my knees were shaking by the time I landed, and I remember being in the middle of the flight on the way back, and I'm just praying, God, get me through this. And this is true. And I said, and I'll never sin again. Well, that was, I know that wasn't. I must have thought God was saying, seriously, is that the best you got? Okay, come up with something else. But I came back, and then a week later, I was like, God, get me through this, and I'll never sin again. But there was a guy who was stationed here, who was a Christian believer, and he used to get his crew together, and they would pray before they go out on a mission at night. And I have to say, and I was probably one of them, people said, what's that guy's problem? What's he doing? Why would you do that? Well, the real question is, why would you be praying in the midst of the storm when you could have prayed before you got into the storm? Why would you wait till it's, till you're in danger? But I think that's sometimes how we are, right? We think we can do it by ourselves. And I think especially guys seem to do that. We have our own strength. We have our own abilities, but it isn't until we start going down for the second or third time, we say, oh, maybe I'm over my head here. Maybe now's the time to call for God. Well, I'm telling you, you need to call for God before you go into the storm, not in the midst of the storm. So in Mark 4:35 and 40, this is 35 to 40, and this is a familiar passage to all of you. It says, as evening came, Jesus said to his disciples, let's cross to the other side of the lake. So they took Jesus in the boat and started out, leaving the crowds behind. But soon a fierce storm came up. High waves were breaking into the boat, and it began to fill with water. Jesus was sleeping at the back of the boat with his head on a cushion. His disciples woke him up, shouting, teacher, don't you care that we're going to drown? When Jesus woke up, he rebuked the wind and said to the waves, silence, be still. Suddenly the wind stopped, and there was a great calm. And then he asked them, why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith? And I've often thought about the last passage. Why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith? And it's a harsh rebuke. I wouldn't want to be in that position, but the reality is we're in that position all the time. When we get pressured, are we actually acting in faith, or are we acting in little faith? And I think just human nature is that we're probably acting in varying degrees of faith, some more than others. But it's a reminder to us is to have that relationship with Christ. Christ didn't go into that storm. He wasn't sleeping in the back of the boat on a cushion, not expecting a storm. There's not a storm that's ever occurred that he didn't already know was going to happen. So when he sent those disciples out in the boat, he wasn't surprised when that storm came up. It didn't take him, I think Pastor said one time, it's like, he didn't say, oh, myself, it's a storm. He didn't say that at all. He was there. He knew what was going to happen. He also knew that with one word, he could calm that storm. That storm was just going to stop. But the disciples were so focusing on the storm, which is what we do. We focus on the storm. We focus on the difficulty. We focus on the challenge, the danger, the pain, whatever it might be. Whatever storm we're in, we focus on that. Instead, we should focus on the Creator, on the person with one word that can calm that storm. And it changes your whole perspective. Now, if I had prayed before I went and I was thinking about Christ all the way through, I'm sure the outcome would have been the same. But that being said, there are times when I say, ooh, are we really going to get through this? And I think that's just how we are. And Christ knows that. But I think when he says, why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith? It's just, and it's really as much as a rebuke, it's an encourager. Have faith. He's saying, have faith. Don't allow the storm to overwhelm you. Don't allow your circumstances that you had no control over to dictate how you respond. If you just trust in me, with one word, I will calm that storm. I know what circumstances you're going through, and I'll deal with them. So I know the plans I have for you. They're plans for good and not to harm you. So what do we know about storms? Christ comes in the middle of storms. Christ came in my storm. And I often wonder, I mean, this rescue happened 31 years ago. So it's potentially irrelevant to anybody that's in the Coast Guard today. I mean, why would you care? But I can tell you that it comes up all this particular rescue comes up all the time. And it's not anything I did or didn't do. It's because Christ was in the storm. It's absolutely because Christ is in the message. I'm actually going to Pensacola 2 weeks from now to talk about this rescue. And it's like, why would they do that? Because whether they know it or not, because Christ was in that storm. And there's a message of hope. There's a message of encouragement. Is that we didn't even say, Christ save us. It didn't work that way. We were, I had both my hands were busy on airplane controls, and the guys on the back, one was on his knees, thank goodness. The other guy who was, literally his first rescue ever, and when we actually landed, he thought that was cool. We wanted to smack him. It's like, that wasn't cool at all. There's nothing cool about that. But Christ was there the whole time. He knew how it was going to end. He knew that 31 years later I'd be standing right here talking to you. He knew that somebody, and I don't have many people in the room here, maybe it's only one person is going to remember this when they're in the midst of their storm and say, well, that could happen to me too. I could feel a touch from Christ. And I think one of the challenges I think we have with Scripture sometimes is we're looking at something that happened 2,000 plus years ago, and I think intellectually we say, well, yeah, I get it. Christ calmed the storm. Okay, I get that. But do we emotionally buy into that? Could that be us? Do we picture ourselves in that boat? Could that be us in the boat? Well, no, it was these guys, fishermen, and the fishermen, they shouldn't have been surprised by the storm either, quite frankly. They didn't have, National Weather Service, but, they were out there on the water. They knew the signs. They shouldn't have been surprised by the storm. And and it's a lake, for goodness sake. It's not the Gulf of Alaska. How bad could it be? But the reality is, for us, is that I think it's sometimes difficult to actually put ourselves in that position where we can say, well, gosh, if I was in that boat, how would I respond? What would I do? Would I be panicking or would I be... And I think when you're sort of sitting here in a nice dry chair, it's like, well, no, I'd have faith. I know Christ could do it. Well, really? Really? Would that really be you? Can you do that? Would you do that? Would you be saying... As the waves are, and it says that the boat was starting to fill with water, are you going to be saying, well, I know Christ is going to wake up sooner or later and he's going to save us? That's probably not how we'd respond. We'd be bailing and crying and wailing and doing all kinds of things like that. And I think that's how we are when it comes to storms sometimes. And I think the challenge is to say, and I'm telling you from personal experience, Christ showed up in the middle of my storm. I didn't ask him to show up. I didn't expect him to show up. Didn't even think about anything about it. He showed up. He showed up in such a real way, such a personal way, at the moment I needed him, because 2 seconds later I wouldn't be here right now. Literally 2 seconds later. So Jesus will speak to us in a storm. And he says, be not afraid. And be not afraid has real meaning. Be not afraid. I think if our first focus, when we're in a challenge, we're in a difficult time, and our first response is to be afraid, then that's taking us away from faith right away. And it's hard, it's difficult, it's not easy to not be afraid. But I think real challenge is, what are we going to turn to first? What's our first response? So how do we prepare for storms? It's in John 4, 9 and 10. That's when Jesus walks on the water. We're familiar with the story. It says, that evening, Jesus' disciples went down to the shore to wait for them. But as darkness fell and Jesus still hadn't come back, they got into the boat and headed across the lake toward Capernaum. Soon a gale swept down upon them and the sea grew very rough. They'd rowed 3 or 4 miles when suddenly they saw Jesus walking on the water toward the boat, and they were terrified. But he called out to them, "Do not be afraid, I am here." And they were eager to let him in the boat. And immediately they arrived at the destination. And I think, and I'm sure there's been dozens and dozens, hundreds if not thousands of messages about this particular passage, but the key that stands out to me is, are you willing to let Christ in the boat? And that's it, really. If you just kept it out of the boat and said, I'll deal with this myself, I can fix it, I can deal with this problem, what the outcome might be different. And I think the real challenge for us is to humble ourselves and allow us to allow Christ in the boat. Several years ago, after we retired from the Coast Guard, we had businesses here in town that that we started, and honestly, right away, the business did really, really well. It was a packaging and shipping business, some of you probably remember it. It's called Mailboxes, etc. And we were in the top 10%. In the first couple of years, we were in the top 10% of all stores nationwide. And actually, Lori and I were featured on a Super Bowl commercial in 1997. It was Green Bay versus somebody or other. Green Bay won, so I know. I don't remember who they played against. You never remember the guy that comes in second in the Super Bowl. But we did really, really well. I mean, we were very, very successful. And then in 1998, for a lot of you guys, I've been around that long, Walmart came to town, and that changed the landscape. It changed the retail landscape. It changed the business landscape. Many businesses started to struggle. I can tell you, for within 3 weeks, we lost 70% of all of our sales. Our revenue dropped 70%. And it wasn't even so much that we competed with Walmart, because, you know, Walmart's Walmart, but people changed the way they shopped. You know, instead of stopping, we were right downtown near Henry's, and so people quit coming downtown, went straight to Walmart. And that's how it is. People wanted America. But very quickly, we realized we couldn't pay the bills. And we struggled, and talk about financial storms. This was a financial storm of epic proportions. I mean, it got so bad, I knew the IRS guy's name. When he would call, I'd recognize his voice. His name was Charles Blue. I recognize him now. And he'd say, "Are you going to pay your IRS bill?" I said, "Not today. Can't do it." And so we were struggling financially. I mean, I was using one credit card bill to pay another credit card bill. And it's not fun. It was a financial nightmare. It's a financial storm. And so one day I was driving out to the airport, and I'd just gone around Dead Man's Curve. And I was born again. I think we'd accepted Christ a year or two before that. But it was a gradual process. You know, there was no lightning strike. It was a gradual process. We grew into our relationship with Christ. And driving around Dead Man's Curve on the way to the airport, and I don't know what happened, but I just knew that I couldn't solve the problem. There's nothing I could do to get out of this financial trap. There's nothing. I tried everything. And so I just literally took my hands off the steering wheel and said, "Christ, I give it to you," right then and there. And it was this crushing weight came off my chest. Literally, all of a sudden I found I could breathe. And I knew at that particular point, in that storm that I was in, that Christ had come into the boat. I'd allowed him in to work through the problem with me. Now, we didn't solve our financial problems overnight. But I can tell you, within 2 years, we closed a business in 2 years, and we paid off $300,000 worth of debt. And I don't know where the money came from. I can't tell you today. Lori couldn't tell you. I don't know where that money came from. But we paid everybody that we owed and closed the business. And sometimes that's maybe the lesson for us, too, is what God has planned for us is not exactly what we think it is. You know, it was God's plan for us actually to get out of that business, because as I look back on it, it would never have succeeded anyway after certain things happened, like Walmart. But God got us out of that. I could not. It wasn't until I finally let go, my pride and just my willingness to do it myself. I could do it. I don't need your help. I don't need your help. You know, one of our kids were little. And I don't know which one it was, but maybe if you got little kids, they do this too. But, you know, we'd try to do something for them. The story is like this, is that we were actually coming from the base, and our son was in the back, and he was probably like 18 months old, and he was kicking his shoes off. And we said, "Andy, don't kick your shoes off." And he said, "Will if want." Is that kind of how we are sometimes? You know, God says, "Don't do that." And you say, "No, will if want." Okay, that's not going to work out well for you then. And that's how we are sometimes. Okay, in Psalm 29:11, and if you don't, the Bible don't have to go with that. It just says, "The Lord gives his strength, and the Lord blesses them with peace." So ultimately what we need to find is the peace of Christ. We need to be humble, and that's difficult sometimes. We need to just turn our lives completely to Christ, so that when we do get into the storm is not a crisis. You know, the Lord knew when he got into the boat that there was going to storm come up. The Lord knew that the government was going to shut down for 35 days. The Lord knows that. And it doesn't mean it's easy. It doesn't mean it's simple. It doesn't mean that there's not anxiety. But it means that if we turn to the Christ first, then our focus is on Christ. Our focus is not on the event. And that needs to be where we begin. That's the beginning of wisdom. And faith, you know, faith starts out small, but faith grows. You know, faith is not something you get like a big box full of it at Christmas. You know, faith is something you have to develop. Faith is something you have to practice. And faith gets tested. You know, if you don't test your faith, then it's really not faith. You never know until you actually put into that position of how strong your faith is. Are you how much are you willing to allow God to direct your life, or do you still sort of hold on to some things? I mean, we do it with money. I mean, and this is not a tithing message at all, but you know, it's like, okay, how much are we willing to? Because we don't have enough, and we won't have. You know, our faith is in God. Our faith is not in what we have. So even though the storms are still raging, if Christ is our focus, and we're, Lauren's not here, so we're ready to go. So I'm ready to wrap it up. Connor will come up. Even if Christ is not our focus, you can go to the next slide. So we need to put him first. So in the middle of the storm, you know, when we're facing raging winds and the turmoil and fear and insecurities, we have to be confident that his plan for us is for good and it's not to harm us. So my question for you today is, where are you? How would you define your relationship with Christ? Are you hearing his voice before the storm? Where is Christ in your life right now?